I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey, friends, thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts.
On today's episode, we're talking with Amanda Kidd Kessler, artist, arts organizer, executive director of the New Hampshire Art Association, and more. This episode is being recorded not in a bathroom, but near one. We're coming at you from inside the New Hampshire Art Association, checking out the WC Gallery.
We have a lot of ground to cover today, so let's get right into the guts of this episode of Creative Guts with Amanda Kidd Kessler.
Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're really excited to be at New Hampshire Art Association and to be talking with you tonight.
Thanks so much for coming.
Yeah, let's dive right in. Can we start with New Hampshire Arts Association? Tell us, our listeners, a little bit about the organization.
Absolutely. So the New Hampshire Art Association has been around for a long time. We've been in Portsmouth for over 30 years. We were founded in 1940. And we are an organization that helps support artists by providing exhibition opportunities, member education. We're really focused on the business of art, so learning how to write an artist statement and write a proposal to help advance your art career. And we have shows, exhibitions here, which are for members only, but also that are open to artists from all over New England. And we have everything from a group show to solo exhibitions and our WC Gallery.
That's fantastic. I did not realize it was that longstanding of an organization.
Yes, and a lot of our founding members are really well-known artists within the New Hampshire art community.
So you have some of your founding members still as members?
Not as members, but I guess I should say that their legacy is still, you know, their names like Grace Casey, who founded the Prescott Park Arts Festival, who was very involved with the NHAA during her day, or Frank Moulton, who is a well-collected New Hampshire artist known for his surrealist rocks, and Lotta Jacoby, who we're celebrating this month with our photography exhibition through our Lotta Jacoby Award, who is well known for being a portrait photographer and was really instrumental in getting photography seen as a fine art and accepted into the New Hampshire Art Association, and to be able to have an exhibition like what we have on right now.
That's amazing.
That's really cool. Do you have any idea sort of why Portsmouth? I'm assuming like New Hampshire Arts Association serves the entire state. So like, how did the organization land in Portsmouth?
We have a long and interesting past. You know, there's been a lot of ups and downs with our organization over the years. And so I know that at one point, Omer T. Lassonde, who is another one of our well-known members, had a home in Boscawen, New Hampshire, and our headquarters was actually in Boscawen. It was really expensive for the NHAA to maintain that historic property, and so we ended up selling it and moving here to the Lovey Gallery in Portsmouth. And New Hampshire, well, I feel like Portsmouth is really an arts and culture hub within New Hampshire, and because we serve artists that are outside of our state, it's really having Maine and Massachusetts so close has really contributed to a vibrant creative community.
Yeah, I can totally see that, the location being touching two states. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but Portsmouth, I think one of the things that we appreciate, that I appreciate at least about New Hampshire Arts Association, is that like in this space specifically, is that it's a little quirky.
Absolutely.
It's an old building, as a lot of the buildings in Portsmouth are. And I think this came up when we talked with Russ Grazier in an earlier episode, that like Portsmouth can be a little bit like posh and fancy and gentrified. So it's really nice to have these like little bits of like grit in Portsmouth. I feel like that's really important to like the art scene.
I've heard, you know, Portsmouth back in the 70s or even in the 90s was just such a different place than it is now.
Yeah.
And I've only lived in the area for, you know, about 3 years. And, you know, I found it to be so comfortable and cozy and nice here because access is so important to what we do. And all of our exhibitions are always free and open to all. We have an accessibility ramp for wheelchair users to enter our building. And you know, we have parents walking down the street with their kids who just want to pop in and like look at, you know, a piece of art for 10 minutes after school. And then we have people who want to come in and, you know, really spend hours looking at everything and studying everything and, you know, knowing every inch of the gallery. And so it's a really nice balance, but not having an admission fee, having it be, you know, having a friendly face when you walk in the gallery, welcoming you in and really making it clear that this is a space for the community and everyone is welcome.
That's amazing. So you've been with the organization for about 3 years?
2 years.
2 years. And so where did you originally hail from?
So I grew up in Sag Harbor, New York, which is on the eastern tip of Long Island. And I went to college at Clark University, and I ended up living in Worcester, Massachusetts for about 12 years. I moved back to Long Island, and then I moved here.
Wow. So coming from New York City to Portsmouth, you know, to folks in New Hampshire, Portsmouth and Manchester and Nashua, those are sort of our big cities.
Yeah.
So can you chat a bit about what it's like coming from a really large, dense area to a relatively small city?
Yeah, so I actually live in Dover, and I was like, wow, people are really Christian here because everything is closed on Sundays. And it was really like, I was like, wow, I guess I can't like have a late night whim and want to go to Taco Bell, or, you know, it's been a little bit of an adjustment. But I feel like it's like a good place to be in your 30s.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. I can definitely see that. I'd love, like, I know New York is like Portsmouth may be like sort of a cultural arts hub of New Hampshire, but like New York is like a cultural arts hub of like
the world,
the country,
the world. Yeah.
Yeah. A little like compare and contrast of like the art scene here versus there. Is there anything like we're doing kind of well in New Hampshire?
Absolutely. So I love supporting living artists and, you know, artists that can benefit from being featured in exhibitions and selling their work today, you know, having resources to be able to continue creating now. Mm. And I think the Seacoast does a really great job of supporting our local artists. And something that disappoints me about large institutions is sometimes that lack of support for emerging artists and thinking about the regional and local communities that depend on, you know, access to culture.
So what do emerging artists do in New York City? I know we're supposed to be talking about here, but I'm just curious, you know, there's more competition, quote unquote, even though you shouldn't look at art that way. Yeah. But I imagine it's got to be a little bit tougher to be seen to get in. Is there more indie alternative outlets, or are people just doing stuff online?
It's a mix of everything, but art associations, you know, sometimes I think the word association can almost be seen as old fashioned. Mm-hmm. Are there actual relevant resources or people or things going on in those types of spaces? Is it just a bunch of old people, you know?
Right.
But I think that art associations for decades have always been this place where you can go and find resources and connect with other artists and see, you know, being part of a creative community and learning from your peers is such a special thing. And art associations create those types of communities where you can say, hey, where are you selling your work? Where are you printing? I'm a potter. Where do I fire my stuff? And be able to come together and share those resources.
And have exhibits and opportunities for actual sales and
everything
like
that. Yeah. It kind of reminds me, it's been a while, but it reminds me of our interview with Eric Katzman Contemporary in Dover, because I recall him talking about being part of the art scene in like a larger city. I want to say DC, but I could just be making that up. And how he talks about like basically like being old and white is like a good way to be in the art scene, and that like it's really hard for emerging artists and diverse artists, and how like important it is to lift those folks up. I love that New Hampshire Art Association has sort of an emphasis on emerging artists and like advancing your arts career.
Absolutely. And we have a special exhibition that happens in March called Fledgling Artists Under 30, and everyone...
Cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. Everyone who gets accepted into that juried show gets a free 1-year membership to our organization. So what I love about it is that it's not just a one-time exhibition and that's it. It's a continuous program where throughout the year they can participate in all of our exhibitions, sell their work at our Sheaf Warehouse Summer Gallery in Prescott Park, take advantage of programs like exhibiting at the League of New Hampshire Fair in Sunapee, and all through, you know, out a free one-year membership of just trying to get out there. So if you participate in the fledgling show, you can effectively build a CV of art exhibitions and professional experience.
That's amazing. Is that something Creative Guts can share? I think we know people under 30.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wish I was under 30.
No.
But yes, we do. We've interviewed people that are under 30, like sure. Josh Salad.
Josh, oh my God, I forgot
Josh
how young
Salad
he is.
Josh Salad is one of our fledgling members.
He's so young.
I love that. Well, we don't need to tell him now, but.
Do you know Caleb Weinstein? He's a glassblower. He lives in Newmarket. He's like.
He's 17.
What, is he 18 now?
He might be 18
He might
now.
Be 18.
I don't know him.
Okay, yeah, we can.
Yeah, but yeah, he's hopefully going to be going to school for glass blowing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Can we switch gears and talk about WC Gallery?
Yes. One of the things that we really wanted to touch upon, because Caitlin Little, who we've interviewed, was like, hey, y'all, you need to come see this and you need to talk to Amanda. So can you share with us the WC Gallery and what makes it extra special?
Yes. So I am a newlywed. And I got married last year in June. And while I was away, we had a member exhibition. And the member exhibition was hugely popular. We had over 100 pieces that we needed to hang in the gallery. So while I was away, my team, which is, you know, mostly Carol Van Loon, who is our exhibition coordinator, she had to hang some artwork in the bathroom. And some of the members were not too pleased with it. And we thought, okay, how can we make this extra special? We'll like do a special call out during the first Friday, make sure everyone's going into the bathroom, make it into a thing. You know, we were just literally out of wall space, not an inch left. So I come back from my honeymoon and Carol was like, we have a situation here. We, you know, this happened. We had to move some art. And she was like, but this has me thinking we need to do something with this space. We need to make it an intentional art space. And everyone who was hung in the bathroom is going to be like eager for that opportunity again. It's going to be so cool. And I was like, all right, let's do it. So we started brainstorming. We came up with the idea of WC because it's like a little bit posh, you know, WC Gallery. You don't really know what it is unless you're British. And so we started playing with that and we thought, let's think of a way to, again, thinking about access and engagement and welcoming in emerging artists and people who maybe don't always feel at home in a traditional art gallery. How can we create an opportunity for them that will be really exciting and accessible? So there's no fee to participate in WC. The process is really simple. You send me an email with your idea and come up with a timeline, a little proposal of what you want to do. You know, you can paint the walls any color. It's really open to your wild, crazy, immersive ideas.
So it's not just hanging art. It's kind of like an installation.
It's an installation.
Yes.
Yes. And who better than Caitlin Little to be the artist in residence to kick it all off?
I yes. literally cannot think of a better fit for a bathroom gallery.
Yeah, so working with Caitlin has been incredible. Their first project was called Restroom, and it was a memoir, that like an immersive memoir experience. So she wrote on the walls in this text that almost looked like graffiti, but some of it was just graffiti, like kind of dive bar bathroom style. But then there were hidden pieces that you would find like underneath the towels hanging on the back of the door that spoke to like these incredibly personal, intimate moments about deciding to get breast reduction surgery. And there were pregnancy tests and stories about having to, you know, go through an ultrasound and hear the heartbeat before getting an abortion. So it felt very timely given this political moment that we're in, and also so personal and raw and real, but like Pepto-Bismol pink. And also it caught a lot of people off guard because with the color scheme of the exhibit and, you know, the fact that it was in the bathroom and it was the first launch of the project, people were like, wait, what? Oh, wow. This is art. And I had patrons come back to the gallery with friends and be like, you have to see this. And it's really kind of interesting to see the demographic of people that it touches.
Yeah. What's the weirdest responses? Have you gotten any that are like, ooh, like shock and awe that is almost negative?
Definitely. We've gotten some that are like, that's graffiti, that's not art.
Oh, interesting. That opens up a whole nother conversation.
That's very interesting. Like art gatekeeping.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, it's not the first time that we've had like a provocative piece in the gallery that sparked those types of conversations of, you know, is it art? Is it good? What is it? But I always love this idea of you don't have to like it, but it is interesting to understand the thought behind the art, you know, the artist who is creating the piece, and thinking about broadening your own horizons. That's feedback that I've gotten from, you know, being like a docent and giving gallery tours here is, you know, sometimes people don't, the work doesn't resonate with them, but they are really interested to hear about the artist and what they were thinking and why they created the piece. You know, when they leave the gallery, they're then like thinking about the creative process and like, oh, wow, is it, you know, maybe art isn't just decorative. And that's really exciting to me, is thinking about that.
You mentioned when there was the shuffle of the show when you were away and some people ended up in the bathroom. One of my questions actually was, have you encountered a bias against bathroom art? And so thinking about, we kind of just talked about patrons, but on the artist end of things, have there been interesting conversations from artists kind of weighing what that means? Like, are some people just like, nope, that's offensive to me because of the location?
Because it's such an immersive exhibition and, you know, we're looking for someone who's going to, you know, go outside the rectangle, go outside the box for this type of thing. You know, not every art opportunity is for every artist, and that's totally okay. And there are some artists like Caitlin Little that really thrive in those like fringe spaces and can turn karaoke into an art form and have like performance be a part of their daily lives. And then there are other artists that feel they enforce maybe more rules or more boundaries around themselves about what they consider their art practice. And there's no wrong answers here. It's all great. It just might not be the perfect opportunity for you, but it definitely is a great opportunity for some artist.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it.
Is it the only bathroom?
It is.
So like logistically, if the show in the WC gallery is too good, it might be a problem if like someone's got to go.
Absolutely. We actually, Caitlin and I had a lot of conversations about that, thinking like, okay, the maximum amount of time that this like people can really be in the space is like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, like anything more than that, we might have like, you know, a queue going.
Like, I know you're enjoying the art, but get out.
Is this bringing up jokes related to the bathroom because I was just about to make a joke like, well, what if someone's got an issue going on and they don't, they need more than 10 minutes, which anyway, if you're in a public space, maybe go home if you've got those, you know, you've got that going on. But I don't know, you know, there's a area of humor that a bathroom is related to.
Absolutely. I mean, I think bathrooms are kind of like almost like this like really intimate space too. You know, you can lock the door. In Caitlin's first installation, she even made like a comment about how like the bathroom was the only room in her house when she was growing up that she could lock the door.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
And I think sense of humor is like, yes, bring it on. Yeah. And something that I think is really fun now that we're in like Portsmouth tourist season is as you walk around Portsmouth, you will see a lot of signs on doors saying, you know, bathroom for customers only, no public restroom, things like that. And so I think it's fun that when people walk into our gallery, I'm like, oh, hi, welcome in. Oh, by the way, the bathroom is an art installation. You definitely want to check that out.
Yeah. I actually was having that same thought too. Been like traveling to a lot of like, I think of like Bend, Oregon, which is a kind of a cool, quirky city in some ways, but also like because there's a homeless population that like every single bathroom is like, you have to get a key from the cashier. And it's very like not accessible to folks who need to use the bathroom. So I was thinking the exact same thing when I came in here. I'm like, it's kind of cool that like anybody could just come off the street and be like, I gotta pee. And they're immersed in art and they have no choice.
Yeah.
And some of like some, so Caitlin is the only artist that has had installations in the WC gallery so far. But during in this exhibition that she has now at toilet level, while you're sitting on the toilet, there's a shelf across from the toilet that has a little prompt that says, you know, write your prayer, have it be answered by divine grace. And so, you know, I spend more time in our bathroom than, you know, the average person since I work here. And I've thought, wow, what do I want what do I want to put on my little prayer slip? You know, I've had a lot of time to contemplate that, but I think it's a great way of engaging people while they're in the bathroom at like toilet level to ask them to think about big questions.
Yeah.
I really want this episode and the WC Gallery to like inspire other art spaces to kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason there can't be an art gallery in the bathroom at, say, like Art Up Front Street.
Positive Street Art has one.
Oh, kind my gosh.
Of. I'm sorry. I don't know if it's a gallery, but they mural it all up. Yeah, so every surface, everything is painted on. It's really, really cool. So that's in a different neck of the woods in New Hampshire. But yeah, maybe it'll catch on. I think that'd be really great. Because, you know, I remember a good bathroom. Like, Anna Chocolate has a beautiful bathroom.
Oh,
like, she has this, like,
gorgeous,
super luscious wallpaper and just, like, a really nice vibe. And it makes you feel really comfortable and safe. And there's a lot of bathrooms where you don't feel that. You feel like, ooh, I don't want to touch a thing in here, you know? So,
Ohana also has a really cool bathroom.
Ooh.
Great wallpaper. Great, like, cool circle mirror with, like, a peach frame.
Maybe we should have, like, a ranking of the bathrooms.
Bathroom tour.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Do you know of other bathroom galleries?
I've definitely seen the murals, and the George Marshall store in York is known when Mary Harding was running the gallery, and now it's Kate Rasha. Mary was sort of known as hanging art in the bathroom. So people would always kind of like go in there and see like a secret piece.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really fun about bathrooms is like that intimacy, you know, like it's not like you're lining up to see the Mona Lisa at the Louvre, you know, it's just you and the art, and you can have whatever kind of visceral reaction you want to have to it in private, or you can, you know, explore. It's like that fun, like hidden space that needs to be explored so it can be fully appreciated and seen.
Mm.
I love that.
It's amazing to think of like folks in their homes decorate their bathrooms. So they make choices, and often it's like, you know, more basic, it's more nautical theme or something like that. But then other people have artwork in there, and it's just interesting. We should put a poll out, like, what kind of art do you have in your bathroom?
Show us your bathroom.
I want to see your bathroom.
Could be a hashtag. Could be a whole thing. I really like the way you tell the story too, particularly with like Carol Van Loon being like, you know, we ran out of room. We had to do what we had to do. There's art in the bathroom now.
Yeah. I also think I used to work as a picture framer. And so something that comes to mind with art in bathrooms is the conservation. And so thinking about work that will survive like a hot and humid environment is like thinking about, you know, taking a shower. And I sold one of my pieces recently, and it was a ceramic leaf piece, an artist created fossil. And I got a message from the buyer being like, perfect art for my bathroom. And I was like, yeah, you know, you don't have to worry about it getting wet. You don't have to worry about paper curling or, you know, a wooden frame absorbing moisture.
Yep, right.
So that's definitely a consideration I have when I'm thinking about art in the bathroom.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Something I wouldn't have really considered.
I know, right?
Do you have art in your bathroom?
Hold on. I'm trying to picture my bathroom. I do.
I don't think you do in your downstairs, do you?
I have one piece in my downstairs bathroom. My downstairs bathroom really needs help. I need to do something with it. I don't like it. I have art in my upstairs bathroom, though. Mostly art that I made. One thing that I bought, I think. It's all very, like, inspirational, too. It's like, that's where I, like, get ready in the morning. So I look at my, like, you got this art. And I'm like, okay, you got this.
We have, like, illustrated, like a mermaid, some weird sea creatures on a ship.
Yeah.
Mm.
I like
but
that.
I guess it's like water themed, but they're kind of oddball ones.
Yeah.
But then we have this tiny little like 4x4 inch block that's a little like bear on a toilet. And it says a good poop makes me smile. And like, we got it on vacation somewhere. It's really cool little like painting. And my husband loves it. So it's right by the light switch. And, you know, just everyone says it makes their day, you know. So lots of things you can do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. You have such a variety of experience as an artist, a curator, a teacher, an arts organizer, and even an internationally recognized art framer. Kind of with all those perspectives, what do you wish that people understood better about the arts or being an artist?
Ooh, that's such a good question. Well, you know, I love all the different experiences that I've had throughout my career with trying different things. And I think my favorite part of all of it is just being able to work with artists. And being an artist is, you know, I think it's kind of cliche to say that it's like a difficult path, but it is, because you're wearing your your creativity and your vulnerability of, you know, you pour your heart and soul into what you create, and then you kind of put it out for public judgment. And it takes a lot of guts to do that. So if I were to say one thing about what I want people to take away from this would be to support living artists, buy art now. You know, I never have a regret about purchasing a piece of art that I see, and starting an art collection where, you know, you can set yourself a budget. It can be $50. It can be $5,000. But what it means to an artist to support them by purchasing their work, or even like truly validating them and saying like, wow, this is amazing, I love this, or I understand what you're trying to say with this work. You know, art is so much about connection and connecting dots that we experience in our lives, and drawing inspiration from all of these, you know, little things that are so uniquely personal, and to be able to present that to someone else and have them get it or like it or want to understand it is so special and validating. And anytime you can do that or give that to an artist, I would say do it.
I love that. And sort of like equally the flip side of that being like an arts consumer or whatever, like I like purchasing from like the smaller artists or like local artists, because then you can like interact with them and know who they are as like a human. So like there's, you know, obviously I have some like whatever famous art on my wall, but I also just have like, oh, I've met that person in real life and like they were cool, or like, you know, I have some of Laura's art on my wall, or like people we've had on the podcast, like I have some of their art on my wall. And like, I love that like relationship between like the artist and the art consumer is like so special.
It really is. And originals and prints, you know, I think prints is a good way to support if your budget is a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And to be able to express what you appreciate and what you connect with. You know, there are ways to find affordable art, you know, that's accessible for all.
Not to compliment Laura, but I really appreciate artists like Laura who have like a variety of price ranges, because art is often inaccessible to people because of the like financial barrier.
Absolutely. And that's something that I talk to a lot of my artists about when I'm, you know, mentoring them and giving them support, especially through the solo show process, is I say, you know, have a variety of price points.
Yeah.
You're going to have so many friends that want to come in, and it's not, you're not selling yourself short by creating a print of your work on a pack of notebooks. Cards or making, you know, a calendar of all of your art that people are going to be super excited to enjoy year round. And that can be a great way for artists to increase their cash flow and recoup some of their expenses of, you know, through the creation of a body of work and having an exhibition. And sometimes those little like hits of dopamine through that validation can like carry you through when you want to be charging $2,000 for your large scale work. And, you know, it's harder to find a collector that has that type of budget right away.
Hits of dopamine is such a good way to put it. It's like when Laura and I get burnt out because we're doing too much work for Creative Guts and not enough of the fun stuff. And then we do like an interview and we're like, yep, that was the hit of dopamine we needed.
I'm already inspired tonight. I'm not going to lie. We do have to be cognizant of time.
We have like a bajillion questions because we were excited about talking about New Hampshire Art Association, and then we were really excited about talking about WC Gallery, and then we looked at your art and we were like, oh crap, like we are just screwed.
I know. So I think we should jump to you.
Okay. Yeah.
And we can talk about how it all intersects after that, but I want to know more about you as an artist, because your work is fantastic.
And it's great.
It really
hit
us.
Thank you so much.
You know, especially your subject matters and the themes of femininity, sexuality, art history, and the environment, and with such an organic quality, your work transcends all the mediums that you're working in to have a definitive style that flows throughout, which I, as an interdisciplinary artist, find very challenging personally. So I admire that a lot. So hit us with it.
Thank you so much. That's
Laura
such a big compliment.
So eloquent. I was just like, Laura, naked ladies, you're going to love this art.
Well, it is naked ladies, but they're goddesses that are, you know, transform. So I'm very inspired by Ovid's Metamorphosis. And what I think is really interesting about it is that I am one of, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, if not more than that, you know, of artists that have responded to this text. And I like to kind of position myself within the larger canon of contemporary art and art history and figure out like, well, who are my art ancestors and who else is making work that, you know, has a similar vibe or is addressing similar similar subject matter. And I think that's, I don't know, that's part of my like nerdiness of, you know, being an artist. I like to do research. So I couldn't believe, like, in reading Ovid, how so many of the stories are, even though they are ancient, they are so contemporary. They're about sexual assault. They're about goddesses fleeing from gods that are trying to assault them. I've always been a very, I don't know, socially aware person, and advocating and being an activist for social justice has been something that I've done since middle school. And it's been really important to me to embrace that passion that I have about wanting to make the world a better place, I guess, in my work. And I also wanted it to feel like authentic. And because I'm a woman, it felt like a safe way and a comfortable and something that I could truly speak to my experience. So there's, you know, the story of, you know, Daphne fleeing from Apollo, and she decides to turn herself into a tree rather than be raped. And I wanted to make art about that in a way that was hopeful and not just really violent, in a way that talked about resilience and empowerment rather than seeing it as a tragedy. And that's where my goddess series came from. And I've explored that series through photography, but mostly through printmaking. And it's something that I think will be like one of those series that I work on for quite some time, and just see where it goes and have it evolve.
Wow, that was so cool to hear the mentality and the backstory behind the formulating of that. That's quite beautiful.
Thank you. And I've always been a nature lover, and, you know, I love going for walks, and I love where we live because we have the ocean, we have the woods, we've got, you know, the best of everything here. And so that enters into my work a lot. And thinking, of course, about climate change and the environmental issues that we have, plastic in the environment is a big one. So my most recent series that I did is called Habitat Vessels. And I actually had a solo exhibition here at the New Hampshire Art Association in May. And for that work, I took chicken wire, post-consumer plastic trash bags, ceramic stoneware, and gold leaf, and created these. To me, they are abstractions of like seaweed washed up on the beach with like a little shell, like a mussel shell or something attached. But they're also, the shell form is very yonic. And I really like that as a symbol of the divine feminine and mm-hmm. female empowerment. And I thought, well, let's just like put some gold leaf on here and make it like extra special. I also love jewelry and, you know, pretty things. So I felt like I had been working on these really, they felt like big ideas and like important works for a long time. But I also wanted to make something that was just really beautiful, that people would be drawn to and intrigued by, and something that would provoke questions. And so the gold leaf has been a really fun way of doing that. And also thinking about the art history component of how gold leaf has been used throughout time to designate holiness and to designate this like revered elite status. And so making that on like this really feminine yonic form has been really fun.
So cool.
There were like 8 sentences in there where I was like, that was the best sentence I've ever heard in my life. Oh my gosh. You're good at talking about your art, which I think is like a skill that not all artists have. There's clearly a lot of like thoughtfulness and philosophy, and like it's great, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm going to be teaching a workshop at Chase's Garage called Advancing Your Art Career, and a lot of that is trying to talk to artists and teach artists about how to write about your work, how to talk about your work, how to understand your work yourself, mm-hmm. because I think that's really key to being a better artist. And I love encouraging people to find who their art ancestors are, you know, do that research and be like, oh, who else is making work like you? And it's not like a bad thing, like you're copying.
Right,
it's like a place of honor of like, mm-hmm. look at these amazing people that came before me that inspired me, or maybe showed me, hey, Judy Chicago, you can sculpt vulvas and, you know, have it be awesome and celebrated. So, you know, do it.
How do you balance your sort of like professional work, working with artists, and your own making art and expressing yourself creatively?
Please tell me you found a secret.
I feel bad that our listeners can't see your face.
Wow, that's such a big question. Well, I have off on Mondays, and I've like made sure throughout most of my career that I have off on Mondays. Monday is my day to be in my studio or to find inspiration and to create. I do emphasize the finding inspiration as just as important as sometimes creating the work. You know, maybe your process is to go for a walk and then go to your studio, or maybe it's to read a text or read a book or a poem or something that you have been, you know, wanting to do for a while. But my Monday rule has been really helpful. I also have been kind of like a lifelong class taker. I'm like one of those people that's like always taking a class. And I love taking classes as an accountability process, because sometimes you need to put money on the line to say, hey, I'm going to do the thing. And I am a very black and white person, not just in my art and my color palette, but also just in the way that, like, I don't know, I live my life. And so if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And I really like to hold myself to the commitments that I make. And I also read 52 books a year, and I have like lots of other little quirks where I'm like, okay, you got to do this, I'm going to do it.
You sound busy.
I'm very busy. Yeah. I love being busy, though. It's like my happy place.
Yeah. I love it, and then I hate it sometimes, but I do appreciate the fullness of life when you can have these goals and these structures, and, you know, they can be lax sometimes, but ultimately you're projecting a goal that's going to be fulfilling you. It's what your soul needs, you know, to read a book, to go for a walk, to make some art. Like, that sounds like a really nice day.
So in January, I got my own studio at Chase's Garage in York. And that has been a really amazing experience for me, because I've always had a studio, but it was maybe like my second bedroom in my apartment, or like, you know, something like that. And so this is my first like around other artists in a designated art making space, in a community studio that also has beautiful printmaking and ceramic facilities, which I use all the time. And so I've noticed that since January, I'm spending like 20 hours a week almost like in my studio, because I'll do a full day Monday. I usually go after work on Tuesdays, and I go on Sundays, and sometimes I throw another day in there. So it adds up, and it's really nice to be able to like leave a piece and then come back to it, and also to have like a place to display works in progress, so you can kind of really gauge where they're at.
I'm in a studio transition right now. I'm at a space I'm going to be leaving, going to a different space, hopefully. And I've been debating whether or not to go back home and just have a a little studio at home. And I can't do it. I think being in that space with others, even if you don't see them all the time, just being in the atmosphere of other people making is really a lovely little environment to be in. And we had talked about Art at Front Street and Rose Bryant, because you are familiar with her. And so, you know, that's a great example of just a nice community of artists who are supporting each other. And, you know, she's built a really cool place.
She really has. And there's so many, I feel like we're really spoiled here. There's such a vibrant art community, and there's places all over the seacoast to get involved, take a class, be around other artists, check things out. So I definitely explore and check it out. Do it.
I can't remember what you said that made me think of it earlier, but I was wondering if you had a place that you practice, because I do think that that's like, it gives you like focus time. It's like the community is amazing, but also like gives you like a place where like, this is the thing I'm focused on right now, because I'm in this place. Because I know from like working from home over the past couple of years, how distracting it can be to not have that like focused environment.
Absolutely. It's like, oh, I could do the dishes, or, oh, my cat's on my lap. That means I can't do anything. Yeah. And so I love having my studio. And I also find that when you're in a class environment, a lot of times there's open studio hours. So for me, it was like a really big financial commitment to pay another monthly rent. And I feel like I had to work up to that for a while. But at the same time, I'm selling more art than I've ever sold.
Right. It makes sense. Yeah.
It's a big deal.
I think it's time.
Yeah, I know.
It's time.
I know.
So we do
there are at least like six more questions that I want to ask.
I know. Maybe in a year we'll do a part two with you.
Okay.
All right.
Rapid fire.
Quick questions with quick answers.
Okay. What other artist has influenced you the most?
Ruth Asawa. Just that, that's just like the, I don't know, the name, the wire wrapping. I've been using a lot of chicken wire in my work. She's very holistic about the way that she incorporates life and art into, instead of just having like wanting to make a body of work or something like that. It's like her whole life is art. And she's also interdisciplinary. So I liked that about her.
Awesome. Favorite art gallery that isn't NHAA?
Oh, well, I'm going to say Arts Worcester in Worcester. It was the place that I had my first real big exhibition after I graduated from art school. And they are such an inspiration and a model for what I'm trying to do at NHAA. So shout out to Juliet Feibel. Thank you.
Awesome.
I love that. Favorite programming or exhibit or thing that New Hampshire Art Association does?
Oh, so many that are so close to my heart. But I would say it's kind of a toss-up. Well, between Fledgling, Pride, and we've got some other exciting things in the works. But both of those programs are really focused on the community aspect of creating art and supporting young artists. And anything that does that, I'm all for and excited about. So March and June are when those exhibitions are.
Oh, cool. Favorite color?
Green, but also gold.
I don't know if anybody's ever said gold before.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Favorite scent?
Lilac.
Favorite sound?
Well, I can tell you what my least favorite sound is. Bagpipes.
I just got a chorus of bagpipes in my head as you said that.
I'm kind of a, like a quiet person. I get overstimulated by a lot of things, so I can't stand bagpipes. But I don't know. I like hearing the crickets at night this time of year.
Yeah.
Very relaxing.
Favorite texture to touch?
Cashmere.
Most inspiring location you've traveled to?
Inspiring is a really interesting adjective there. Mm-hmm. I think one of my most inspiring trips was I went on an artist residency called the Village Canoe. And it was a floating residency. So we paddled on the Penobscot River and into like Castine Harbor and around Deer Isle.
Whoa.
On 30-foot canoes with 10 other artists and a guide. It was really incredible.
I hope this isn't a stupid question, but are you sleeping on the canoes? Or are you like,
yeah, how long were you out there?
Or...
So this was back in 2019, and it was the inaugural Village Canoe residency. We camped on like a lot of like main little islands and things like that. So we weren't sleeping on the canoe, but we did paddle like 10-ish miles a day.
Wow.
It felt like, and you know, I feel like some of these details might be a little bit not the most accurate at this point, but that it was just a really incredible experience, and it actually inspired me to move up here because before I was like, why does everyone like Maine? I don't quite get it. Like, what's the deal? And then
I'm from there and I don't get it. No, I do. I do.
But then I went on this trip and I was like, okay, I get it now. This is awesome.
That's so wild.
Clint, your question here. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Well, when I was young, I felt a lot of pressure to, I don't know, like make a career for myself. And so because of that, I didn't immediately go to art school. And I first went to college as a pre-med major. And then after my first semester, quickly decided to switch. And I think I would have given myself permission to make more decisions that were purely what I wanted, rather than thinking about what I was supposed to do or what would be like the wise decision. Because being happy and doing what you want and what makes you feel good is so much more important than doing what is, you know, society thinks is right.
Yep. You only get one life.
Yep.
I mean... Mm-hmm. That we know of. So, you know.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
It has been such a treasure. Like this, just everything you're saying, I'm just like, oh, harness this feeling because it's very inspiring and it's fulfilling, I think, our cups. And especially being the first interview coming back after our long break over the summer, it's been really, really extra special.
Oh, thank you so much.
I can't wait to listen to it again.
I know. Yeah.
I'm kind of nervous to listen to it. Like, oh, did I say the right thing? I don't know.
I wouldn't blame you if you didn't listen to it. I suspect that some of our guests are like, no, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some don't, but
yeah,
but some, a lot do. And they say, oh, that was really great. You know, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you made me sound better than I do.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, no, you really sound great.
We don't do that much editing.
Thank you again so much for being on the podcast. We really appreciated talking with you.
Thank you for listening and for having me. I love having the opportunity to encourage artists. So thank you.
It's really awesome.
It was really awesome.
So with that,
show us your creative guts.
Thank you to Amanda Kidd Kessler for joining us on Creative Guts. It was such an amazing chat with Amanda. From the story behind her own art to her drive and creativity within working at NHAA, she is just an inspiring force. Amanda brings people together, boosts up artists, especially emerging ones, which I think is such an important part of the creative ecosystem everywhere, but also very much in New Hampshire. Thank you, Amanda, for all that you do and for sharing your story with us.
I'm so glad that Caitlin Little put us in touch with Amanda and made this happen. I've walked by the New Hampshire Art Association a few hundred times and never really paid it that much attention. But between the space itself and the sort of creativity behind the WC Gallery, it's proof that there's so much quirk left in Portsmouth's art scene. During our interview, Amanda said finding inspiration is just as important as creating the work. That is a quote that jumped out at me and will stick with me. If you want to check out the New Hampshire Art Association, they're on the web, nhartassociation.org. They're also on Instagram and Facebook. Their handle is NH Art Association. You should definitely check out Amanda's work. Her website is kid-kessler.art, and she's also on Instagram. Her handle is 2CatPress. We thought that we'd sort of be exclusively talking about the WC Gallery and the New Hampshire Art Association, but Amanda's work totally captured us, and so we had to squeeze in some questions about that too, because it's so beautiful.
As always, you can find those links and more in the episode description and on our website, creativegutspodcast.com. You'll find us on Facebook and Instagram at Creative Guts Podcast.
This episode is sponsored in part by the Rochester Museum of Fine Arts. Thank you to our friends in Rochester for their support of the show, and a special thank you to Amanda for hosting us at the New Hampshire Art Association.
If you love listening and want to support Creative Guts, you can make a donation, leave us a review wherever reviewing is applicable, interact with our content on social media, purchase some merch. Whatever you are able to do, we appreciate you.
Thank you for tuning in.
We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Creative Guts. Never again.
Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts.
Laura's voice is way better than that.
Who said that? That was crazy.
Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts.
Who said that?
Kermit the Frog just walked in. Why is he narrating it like in the third person?
Kermit, thanks so much for being on the Creative Guts podcast.
Oh, happy to be here.
Tell us about your childhood. Did you always want to be a Muppet?
Well, from a young tadpole, I just knew that, you know, I was meant for the stage. I was meant for a big screen, and this little green frog was going to be famous.
Wow, that's so inspiring. What advice would you give to other aspiring Muppets?
Keep hopping along. Don't give up.
What are we doing? I can't stop.
Should we, our mini episode, be an interview with Kirby? Should we make one?
Our ability to focus is so shit.
I know. We could have a bonus episode.
That's just an interview with Kermit.
But no, it's like, it's talking about like the salon show or something, but it's like you saying, oh, hey, we wanted us our new spokesperson. And then you interview Kermit about the thing. That'd be so annoying.
Hey, Kermit, have you seen our new youth zine? We just recently published it on the website.
Oh, I went crazy for it. It was amazing.
Okay. Sorry, there's like a minute and a half you're gonna have to figure out what to do with.
I love it.